Namaste Sarasvatam Deve, Gauravani Pacharane, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, Paskatyade Satarne. Om Agarantivanandasya Gananjana Salakaya, Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha, Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutle, Swayam Rupa Kadam Hayam Dadati Svapadantikam, Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yesterday we got up to verse number 43 in the first chapter. So this is the conclusion of Arjuna's reasons why he doesn't want to fight. Can anyone remember some of the different reasons so far? Yes. Yes, he didn't want to incur sin. What else? He wouldn't become happy. Right. Anything else? Yes. Yes, destruction of the Vana and Ashram system. What's that? Adharma. Sin, adharma, it's the same thing. And there's something else which we'll come to again. He was indecisive. He didn't know whether it would be better to kill his relatives or to be killed by them. So that we'll come to. So Arjuna had some doubts. In other words, his duty was awaiting him to fight, but he didn't know whether he should do. He was hesitating to do his duty because so many different doubts. Of course, nowadays, no one knows what their duty is. Therefore, they don't have these doubts. The only doubt they have is whether they should watch Channel 2 or watch Channel 4. So Krishna didn't really have to speak the Bhagavad Gita to solve those doubts. But the Bhagavad Gita is meant for people who are somewhat civilized and they realize that they have some higher duty than to eat and sleep. Or watch television, whatever. So here, text number 44. Aho bhata mahapapam kartum vyavasita vayam yad raja sukalo bena hantun swajanam udyata. Alas, how strange it is that we're preparing to commit greatly sinful acts. Driven by the desire to enjoy royal happiness, we are intent and killing our own kinsmen. Text 45. Yadi mama prithi karam ashastra shastrapanaya dhatarashvarane hanyus tanme shematuram bhavet. Better for me if the sons of Dhritarashtra, weapons in hand, were to kill me unarmed and unresisting on the battlefield. Text 46. Sanjaya vacha evam yakvarjana sankhe rapot vasusha. This Sridhasasram Japam Shokasam Vignamanasa. Sindhaya said, Arjuna, having thus spoken on the battlefield, cast aside his bow and arrows and sat down in the chariot, his mind overwhelmed with grief. In other words, after Arjuna, generally if one quotes Shastra or scripture, he gives a whole speech, then it's to be understood that he knows something and that he's going to he's at least encouraged to follow what he said. But here Arjuna, after speaking, he's become more bewildered than when he started. Therefore, Krishna did not appreciate Arjuna's philosophy very much. Just like if you were on the street and someone walked up to you with a book and said, here, take this book. It'll make you real happy. Such an exciting book. You think, wow, it's all right, you keep the book. Give it to someone else. I already have enough of that type of happiness. So similarly, the person presenting the arguments should have at least understood something about what he's talking about. Otherwise, it's not sometimes appreciated. So Krishna doesn't appreciate what Arjuna is saying. So in the next chapter is called The Contents of the Gita Summarized. Krishna, after speaking the contents of the Gita Summarized, which doesn't, as I said, it doesn't mean he said, now Arjuna, now listen to chapter 2, I'm going to summarize the whole Bhagavad Gita. Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, and he thought maybe Arjuna will be able to understand the philosophy quite quickly. But after 72 verses, or some minutes of speaking the Bhagavad Gita, then Arjuna was more confused at the end of the second chapter than he was at the beginning. But fortunately, Arjuna, he was able to ask the proper questions, so that if we hear the Bhagavad Gita and hear the questions and the answers that Krishna gives, then we won't be as confused. Gradually, at the end of the 18th chapters, we should come to the same conclusion that Arjuna came to, at least after reading it 10 or 20 times, that we should surrender to Krishna. But he does speak the second chapter, the contents of the Gita summarized, and it's not very clear, it's not very organized and very clear exactly what Krishna is saying. Of course, we can, if we read the second chapter because of Prabhupada's purports, therefore it seems quite obvious. Krishna is saying in every verse, surrender to me. But factually, that's Prabhupada just giving us this. Is there's another chair there if you want to use the chair. No problem. So Arjuna, he was hearing the Bhagavad Gita, but Krishna was not speaking just for bhakti. In other words, Krishna did not speak in the Bhagavad Gita only for those persons who want to surrender to Krishna. Krishna is speaking in many different ways simultaneously. He's speaking for the karmis, he's speaking to the jnanis, he's speaking to the yogis, he's speaking to everyone to encourage them to eventually come to the platform of bhakti. Especially the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita can be understood in many varieties of ways. It can be understood for the jnanis, it can be understood by the yogis. Just like a very enthusing verse for the karmis is Yad karoshi yad ashnasi yad jahosi didasi yat yat tapasi kunte yat tat karusham anarpanam. That when all that you offer, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all the austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering to me. So for the karmis, this is great. I can just do whatever I'm doing, and I just offered some results to Krishna, and that's, Krishna says, I'll come to the perfect platform. And for the jnanis, he says, Bhavanam janmanamante jnanamamam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti saramahatma sudurlava. Just keep on speculating. And eventually you'll come to the conclusion. It may take a little while, if you're patient, after 100 million births, you'll gradually understand things. So just be a little patient, keep speculating, eventually you'll figure out what's going on. And for the yogis, he says, Yoginam api sarvesham madgaten antaratmana shadavam bhajate yomam samayuktatamo mataha. Just keep on looking inside your heart, doing yoga, doing your exercises every day, and your breathing exercises, and one day you'll come to me. So the yogis become very enthusiastic. Yes, we're on the right path. So similarly, when one hears the second chapter, if one is karmi, he'll think that this is exactly what I was talking about. Karman yeva dikaraste ma palayeshu kadachana ma karma palahetuarbor ma te sangha sukarmani. Just do your duty and give up the results. In other words, it's something for everyone. For the jnani, it's there, especially in the second chapter. But we should, Prabhupada has explained everything from the point of view of bhakti, because he knows what Krishna's conclusion is. Therefore, he doesn't explain it from the point of view of the karmis or the jnanis or the yogis. And some persons, when they read Prabhupada's translations, when they read his purports, they think he's added something. He has added something. He's added Krishna. Because people have avoided him for so long, they've subtracted Krishna. So Krishna, Prabhupada has simply added Krishna back to the purport. When Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita, he wasn't encouraging Arjuna to perform Astanga Yoga in the middle of the battlefield. You know, just sit down, put a kusha grass down here, on top of your chariot, cover it with a deer skin or soft cloth. You know, sit on it with head and neck and watch out for arrows whizzing by. Just kind of concentrate a little bit. No, he wasn't encouraging any of these things. Or open up, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam, start reading in the battlefield and hope you can read a few verses before, you know, something unusual happens to you on the battlefield. But Krishna is actually encouraging Arjuna from the very beginning to surrender. And that we'll be able to see through the verses. But one has to be a devotee to understand that. If one is not a devotee, it appears that Krishna is encouraging Arjuna in a different way. So the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita can be divided, without going into all the details because we don't have enough time. But for the first 10 verses, 1 to 10, it's more or less Krishna is again, or Arjuna is again giving some excuses why he can't fight. Arjuna's reason. Why he doesn't want to fight. And then you have from verses 10 or 11 to 30, this is called Jnana Yoga. So Jnana Yoga is also called Sankhya Yoga in the Bhagavad Gita. It's the analytical study of the difference between matter and spirit. This is Krishna's first instructions, because Krishna is instructing us how to come to the spiritual platform. But unless we first understand that we're a spiritual soul, then there's no reason why we should try to come to the spiritual platform. And then he instructs from 30 to 38, he instructs in what's called Karmakanda. The Karmakanda is following the directions of the Vedas in order to get some material result back. There are 100,000 lakhs of verses in the Vedas. That's 100,000 lakhs. So that's one with another five zeros. So, for those who like to read, there's 10 billion verses in the Vedas, plus the commentaries. Just like Srimad Bhagavatam has 18,000 verses, plus commentaries. So it took Lord Brahma, he studied the Vedas three times. Of course, he lives for 311 trillion years. So he studied in his spare time the Vedas. We don't have that much time, but out of this 10 billion verses, 9 billion are Kamakanda verses. So in a democracy, people would have left Kamakanda. Fortunately, we're not living, Krishna consciousness is not based on democracy. But there are 1 billion Jnanakanda verses. And then there's a few on Bhakti, on Upanishads. Karmakanda. So Krishna, it's a little unusual. Krishna first says, you're not this body. And then he switches and tells Arjuna, well, even if you think you're your body, still you should fight. And then he gives the reasons from the Karmakanda section. If you can't understand you're not this body, then at least, if you're going to work on the material platform, do the right thing. Prabhupada used to do this also sometimes. When he would preach, his generally preaching, first he tried to explain, like Professor Kotowski in Russia, that you're not this body. But Professor Kotowski was completely fixed on the bodily concept of life. So Prabhupada then started to explain about Vana and Ashram, that our purpose is to create a first-class man.
Professor Katatsu couldn't understand that either, because his aim was to create fourth class men. And he's quite good at it too. Sudras, or communists, whatever you want to call them. So there are these verses, and then Krishna switches over from 39. He starts explaining about Buddhi Yoga. So this is something that, this is what Krishna actually wants Arjuna to do. Buddhi Yoga, we have to explain, somewhere on the corner here, that the progression, this is called the Yoga Ladder. This is the Yoga Ladder, which is the very basis of understanding the Bhagavad Gita. That the Bhagavad Gita is a progression of consciousness. And the consciousness begins, we can say, with Vikarma. So Vikarma means sinful activities. Basically, the modern religion. If it feels good, then do it. Try not to hurt too many people. That's called Vikarma. And then there's karma. Karma has many definitions. But basically, Krishna, when he was asked for Arjuna, what is karma? He says, Aksharam Brahma Parama Subhava Dhyatma Uchade Buddha Bhava Bhava Karo Visarga Karma Sangitaha. He says that karma means activities which develop material bodies. In other words, if we perform some activity in the consciousness for fruit of results, trying to get something back, or for sense gratification, that consciousness or mentality creates another body. So that's called karma. Also, karma is defined in another part of the Bhagavad Gita, that when the demigods, they fall down from the heavenly planets, the little bit of pious activities that they have left, that creates their next body, so that they can enjoy on some celestial place in Bhumandala, on this earthly platform. So that's also called karma. But karma is generally activities following the scriptures. But not for sense gratification. And then, by following karmic, there's two different types of karma, or at least following the scriptures. One is for immediate rewards. You worship the sun god, for instance, if you want to be healthy. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it explains. If you want a good wife, you worship who? Uma. Everyone knows that one. If you want wealth, who do you worship? Kuvara. I seem to know a lot about the demigods. If you want powerful sex life, who do you worship?
Vajrapati.
Indra also. You can take your choice. So this is all immediate results of karmakanda. But for those who become more expert at karmakanda, they start finding out that there is a possibility of not only getting a wife in this life, but if you perform certain sacrifices, you can go to Swarga. And there you cannot get an ordinary wife, you can get an apsara. And you can live there for 100 billion years. You don't grow old. You don't have to pay taxes. Because we don't pay taxes either, but there's no air, there's no pollution. There's big festivals. There's gardens. Everything's so nice there. You can go and live in Swarga for 100 billion years. So that's another type of activity. This is for next life results. Because the person, he studies the Vedas, he hears about the sacrifices you can perform to get the results, and he performs the sacrifices. He gives the offering to the priest performs the sacrifice, and the result is he gets good health. He goes and offers a lamb to the sun god, and he finds out that he's healthier. He finally gets some sun, as they say. He gets some sunlight. Someone looks, and his friends see him and say, "Wow, you look like you have a better complexion." He said, "Yeah, I've been taking up a new practice. I'm worshiping the sun. I'm walking the lamb. Looks like you got a tan. A little color to your cheeks." So in this way, he develops a little faith in the process. And then, because he has faith, he hears about other sacrifices because he's associating with the priest, and he hears he can go to Swarga. So he says, yes. Just like some of our congregational members or some of our members, they come and they put, in some places it's like a dollar and a quarter in the kitty, because they think, they heard that they're going to get something auspicious. They go and they put it in, they pray, you know, maybe you'll come, please, my dear Lord, make it a million and a quarter. So in this way, they have some faith. Just like they have this place in Tirupati, is that where they put all the people come, they throw their jewels in, and they throw all their money in, and they throw everything. Not because they're simply expecting, you know, to surrender everything. They have nothing better to do. But they have faith that eventually, what's the name of the deity there?
Venkateshwara.
In the next lifetime, they'll get millions of times the results. So this is karmakanda. But after one gets all the results, he gets health, he gets a nice wife, he gets a house, he has a one-way ticket to Swarga, he thinks. No return. But then he's still not happy. In other words, his wife runs away. His dog bites him one day. His children grow up and they become juvenile delinquents. They take drugs and become hippies. His favorite cow dies, leaves the world. And this way he finds out this, even though he got all these benedictions, he's still suffering. And then he reads in the other parts of the Vedas that even if he goes to Swarga, that Indra, he's not happy, he's always worried about the demons coming and attacking him. He commits some sin against a Brahmin. He has to live in a lotus flower for 100,000 years. He becomes a snake sometimes, or he's born as a pig. So in this way, he's thinking that maybe there's something better. And then he finds out about the 1 billion Gyanakanda section. He finds out he's not his body. And so he takes the Gyanakanda knowledge that you're not this body. But that's not the end of it. Above karma, even continuing on from karma here, is called karmakanda or karma yoga. So karma yoga means that one realizes that the aim of his activities is to please Vishnu. And this we'll explain when we get to the third chapter. That Krishna says, anabhavati bhutani parjanan anasambhava. That karma, basically everyone's working for getting food. That's the most basic thing everyone works for. Because people have become divorced from the reality of what real economic development is. They had some conception that if they get a faster computer, then they're actually going to feel satisfied. You're looking for something. That if I get a faster computer, if I get a bigger house, if I get a better car, if I can this and that. But actually, what they really want, the only thing that can satisfy one, is nice food. It's amazing, especially in the Western countries, when you see people walking down the street, talking to each other and eating some poor dead animal, someone that died, or some animal that died in the last war that they froze. And the person is completely unconscious, just eating something. People become so unaware of what their real necessities of life are. But when someone becomes aware that anagavati bhutani, the most basic thing is food, but where does food come from? It comes from grains. And where do grains come from? They depend on rains. But where does rain come from? If we listen to the scientists, we'll think everything's an accident. But, and according to the Vedas, rains come from performance of sacrifice. And where do sacrifices come from? They come from the Vedas. And where do the Vedas come from? They originate from the breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everything, Krishna, it says, therefore sacrifice is based on the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even for our food, ultimately we have to depend upon Vishnu. Even to get the rains, which produce the grains, which produce our food, we have to satisfy Vishnu. Although, people nowadays, they think that we're getting the rain free of charge. But they don't realize that it's just due to the fact that they had a small bank account balance at the end of their last lifetime, and now it's running out. Because around here it doesn't look like it's running out. But eventually it will run out. Either there'll be too much rain, or there won't be enough rain. It's an interesting sidelight. Prabhupada said, but the year 2000, which we have only a few years left, when he was in Holland, just to quote Prabhupada, he was invited by the TV program there. At that time, in 1969, the devotees had one hit record from Apple Records, which was produced by George Harrison. It was called the Hare Krishna Temple album. And it was number one in some countries, I think maybe in Germany?
In Yugoslavia.
In Yugoslavia.
For 6 months, it's in Germany on number
three. Yeah. Three. The television program invited the devotees to come and do a 5-minute concert on the program. And Prabhupada came along. And they went into the building, and the building had no windows in it. Prabhupada was amazed. A building without any windows. He said, no one in India would ever live in a place like this. All artificial light, artificial air. And Prabhupada asked if they could find a window somewhere where he could sit next to. So Prabhupada, they found on the third floor one window, and Prabhupada sat by it. And he said, by the year 2000, he said that people will be forced to live underneath the ground. They'll have food, but they won't have fresh air and light. Of course, we'll see. We have a few years left. In any case, you can chant Hare Krishna underneath the ground too. But food is dependent on sacrifice, and sacrifice comes from Krishna. Therefore, karma yoga begins with understanding that. Even if I do my work to get some results, still I know I have to depend upon Vishnu. The result will come from Vishnu, not from a demigod. Sometimes Prabhupada even translates karma yoga as bhakti yoga. In other words, when one works, but that's actually buddha yoga. And then, above that, of course, is something called jnani yoga. When one understands knowledge about Krishna, Prabhupada defines the yoga ladder in different ways. Sometimes he says karma yoga, the beginning is karma yoga, when there's some knowledge about Krishna and some detachment. And then he says that jnana yoga, when the knowledge increases and the detachment increases, it's called jnana yoga. And another place, Prabhupada says, karma yoga means that one knows that the goal is Vishnu, but one is addicted to the results of his activities. He knows that he should be pleasing Krishna, but he's addicted to the activities of sense gratification. He wants something in the future, also for a result. He says Jnana Yoga means he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculation to understand Krishna. But when he seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness, that's called Buddha Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. And next thing is, right before that is Astanga Yoga. So that's when the mind, to fix the mind on the super soul. In other words, from Jnana Yoga, you're on the Brahman platform, Astanga Yoga, Paramatma platform, and finally there's Buddha Yoga. It is also called Nishkam by the Acharyas. Karma Yoga. So Buddha is also called Bhakti Yoga. If we can understand these terms, Buddha Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, they're synonymous. The Acharyas, they use the word Nishkam Karma Yoga. This is what Krishna wants Arjuna to do. That Buddha Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, Nishkam Karma Yoga, what they are, they're a combination of Jnana Yoga. They're actually a combination of all of them. Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and even really Astanga Yoga. They're a combination of all the yogas. It's the combination. It's to work but in consciousness of Krishna. It's not a question of simply offering the results to Krishna or gaining knowledge of Krishna, but it's to work in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes the devotees who distribute books, they ask whether I should concentrate on distributing books or concentrate on thinking of Krishna. But here the answer is, you should do both. That there should be no difference between, if you're actually doing the activity to please Krishna, then by distributing books you should naturally think of Krishna. Now we'll just explain a little bit more about Nishkam Karma Yoga. So Nishkam Karma Yoga is actually to work, but in transcendental, with transcendental knowledge. This is also Buddha Yoga. But that transcendental knowledge can be Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So one can work with transcendental knowledge, but his transcendental knowledge could be that of I'm not this body, that's Brahman, or he could be meditating on the super soul, that's Paramatma, or he can be thinking of Krishna, Bhagavan. It's all Nishkam Karma Yoga or Buddha Yoga. But when it comes to the stage where one is thinking of Bhagavan, then it's called Bhakti Yoga. Is that clear? Yes.
There are three steps of truth and fifth step is just Karma Yoga and Krishna consciousness.
So that's what it's talking about. That's Buddha Yoga. Or anyone of these. If we understand the yoga ladder, then we can understand where we're at and where other people are at also. According to the differences of consciousness, then people will have different ways of working. So let's start with the second chapter now.
Sanjaya Vacha Tam Tada Kripya Vishtam Ashupurna Kulekshanam Vishidam Damidam Vakyam Uvacha Manasudana. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudana Krishna spoke the following words. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Kuta Swav Kajmalamidam Vishame Samupastitam Anaya Dushtam Ashvargyam Akirtikaram Arjuna. Supreme Personality of God had said, my dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the values of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy. Text 3. Klaivyam asmakamakparta naitatva yupabhidite shudram ridiyadabalam tiyatvotishta parantapa. O Sanaprita, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. Krishna knows how to enthuse someone. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, my dear Arjuna, how have you, that you become so bewildered and have suffering from such a petty weakness of heart? So he's using the word, you're impotent. So for a Kshatriya, this is quite an insult. Because the Kshatriyas, they're 18 feet high. So just like if you walked out to an 18-foot high person who weighed half a ton, and you walked up to him and say, at least in America they say, you big sissy. They feel a little insulted. And probably they take their little toe and step on you. And then they look around trying to figure out where you went. So here Krishna is telling Arjuna, who's a Maharati, who can fight with thousands of warriors. He fought against Indra, or he fought with Indra. He fought against Lord Shiva. He defeated the great demons and the heavenly planets. And Krishna is saying, you're impotent. So this is a great insult. Arjuna is not about to, although he's sitting down in the chariot crying, he gets a little insulted. So he's going to defend himself right now. He's saying, how are you telling me that my compassion, just like sometimes we may start crying because, something happened. We think, oh, I'm such a nice person. I'm so humble. Everyone should really appreciate how advanced I am. But objectively, someone walks up to us and says, you're in Maya. Get out of Maya. We think, what do you mean I'm in Maya? I'm a great personality. I'm relishing how advanced I am. But actually, we're in Maya. So Arjuna, he's going to defend himself after hearing Krishna tell him that you're a sissy. So he says, Arjuna Vacha, Vitam Vijvamaham Sankhe, Dronam Chamana Sudana, Ishvi Pratyotsami, Purjahavari Sudana. Arjuna said, O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counteract with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? Arjuna addresses Krishna as Madhusudana. Krishna had a relative named Madhu. In the dynasty of the Yadus, there was a great king named Madhu. But Madhu was also a demon, Madhu Kaitava. Madhu Kaitava were born at the very beginning of creation. Lord Brahma, one day he was starting to sweat, and from his sweat, perspiration, two demons appeared, Madhu and Kaitava. And so Krishna, they attacked Lord Brahma, but Krishna, he saved Lord Brahma, and he killed the Madhu demon, so he's known as Madhusudana. Arjuna is saying, my dear Krishna, you're known as Madhusudana, the killer of the demon Madhu. You're not known as Madhusudana because you killed your relative Madhu. But now you're asking me to kill Bhishma, who's a great devotee. He's one of the Mahajans. And Dronacharya, who's a great Brahmin. They're my grandfather and my teacher. You're telling, you didn't want to kill your, you killed a demon, but not your relative, so how do you expect me to kill these great personalities? I shouldn't be offering them arrows. I should be offering them flowers and worship. Text 5. Guruna hatva hi mahanu bhavan sheyo bhaktum vaishnama piyaloke advartikaman sudguruni haiva bunjiya bhogan rudir pragdidan. It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. How could Arjuna, so many wonderful personalities are fighting, his grandfather who raised him from childhood, his teacher, his maternal uncles, they were his brothers, all his cousins, everyone was on the battlefield. So after killing them all, then how is he going to enjoy it? After killing all the persons that he had an affectionate relationship with, who is he going to be left with to enjoy? Just like they say, the operation was successful, but the patient died. Text 6. Nachaita vidmat katarona garyo yadvaje ma yidina vano jayayu. Yan eva hatvane didi vishamas devastika pramukhe dhartarashtra. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill this